Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape the community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
With a new year, often comes resolutions, but it doesn't have to be about your physical health. Instead, you could focus on your financial health. Author and financial educator Berna Anat, a self-described financial hype woman and rich auntie in training, talks with WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez about how to approach refocusing on your finances this new year.
A lot of your work, like you said, you're focused on first-gen folks, people of color, people that just haven't grown up with or had the option of generational wealth and what that could mean to for safety and all these things. And then thinking of money that way, it's not just money, right? It's shame, it's trauma. This is a big question, but what are some of the hangups you see in the way that we kind of have relationships with money that could unstick us from a debt journey or help us on our way through a debt journey?
Oh, for sure. That's a great question. I will say straight up that everybody in the club has shame. Everybody in the club has shame about money to some degree, to some flavor, because for so many BIPOC families, for second gen families, immigrant families, the kind of resounding theme is, oh, we don't talk about money. Most of the people I work with come from families where they either didn't talk about money at all, or the ways that money was talked about was already preloaded with shame and guilt or not enoughness. And to be clear, these things are not just like magical feelings that like came down from above, like our ancestors just sort of gave us this baggage. This is stuff set up systemically. You know, a lot of, again, immigrant, first-gen BIPOC families, in their histories or even in their immediate lineage, they felt the actual effects of being underpaid. Like any kind of wealth-building tactics are totally kind of out of reach for them. Getting the information gatekept, actual like colonization, pillaging of their wealth, however many generations back. From there, we're taught these messages of shame, of because you don't have enough, that's your fault. I'm going to be a little bit of like a bootleg, completely unlicensed mental health person because I love that stuff.
Okay, we're here for it.
Just like know that this is like incredibly unlicensed words. But I am going through my own, I've been going through my own therapy journey and understanding that things, for example, in like our personal relationships and romantic relationships, there are things that we've learned from our parents and our caregivers that we carry on into our adult relationships. Same exact thing for our money brains. There are things that we learn from our caregivers and the world around us that we bring into our adult financial behaviors. So I just really want to invite a lot of, again, grace, space, understanding it's not easy to be the person kind of in between generations trying to figure it out and stop the cycle, because it's a big ask. It's a big lift.
So I want to play a little game with you. I mined some questions from folks around Milwaukee. And when I told them I was talking to you, I was just like, do you have anything to ask your future rich auntie? What would you like her to give you advice on? So would you be up to answer some of their questions?
Oh, 100%. I'm always trying to practice my future auntie-like self. So let's go.
Okay, perfect. So the first one, can I trust Google to teach me how to budget because my rent is high? How much should I be spending and saving?
Great question. It's really common now to just turn to the Googles or the ChatGPTs and be like, help, help, fix it for me, please. I would trust Google to a certain degree in that it might give you the general information, like the sort of general advice of budgeting when your expenses are super high. This general advice you might find through the Googles is the 50-30-20 rule. And so that's kind of been the party line for many, many years. That rule says your budget, I'm putting lots of air quotes around things, that if you're budgeting your money, 50% of your money, quote unquote, should go to your expenses. These are your needs. I call it my come get me bills, because if I don't pay these things, someone's going to come get me. Someone's going to be like, I need that light bill. I need that, you know, health insurance bill. Your rent is supposed to fit in that 50%. This is where I lose a lot of people already. They're like, 50, what?
Yeah. Supposed to be rent 50%? In which year?
Exactly. Yeah. Which decade? Whom's ancestors is paying 50%? And then 30% of your money, quote unquote, should go towards your wants, you know, entertainment and fun and things you don't necessarily need for survival. And then that last 20%, quote unquote, should go towards your financial goals. So that's savings, that's putting extra down on debt, investing extra for retirement and things like that. Now, if you're a person that's like, my rent is high, and it will not fit inside of that 50%, you got to be able to stretch it and flex it to what works for you. The problem with the 50-30-20 rule is that it makes people read the majority of us in major cities be like, oh my God, I'm broken. Something's wrong with me. But please know that when I was on like an aggressive debt payoff journey, I would say my like that 20% became like 40%. I had to go all the way down on my like regular expenses. And then before that, my 50% was actually 70%. A lot of people see the 50-30-20 rule and they're like, oh, well, budgeting's not for me. I don't fit in there. It's really about customizing it to where your life actually is and giving yourself a lot of time to see where your percentages fall, knowing that budgeting is an exercise that you should be returning to regularly and like messing with regularly. My percentages never stay in one place. They always flex according to where I live, what I'm doing, what my priorities are. It's a good place to start, but be gentle with yourself.
I appreciate the gentle approach, which kind of gets into another question I heard was the idea of not internalizing being a moral failure for living paycheck to paycheck. Even trying to think about money or how to save when someone's in survival mode.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Maybe it's because I woke up feeling spicy today, but I immediately feel defensive for this person that might feel like they are a moral failure for having debt. Now that I think it's because we tapped into this like auntie persona, I immediately feel very defensive for this person in that not only are you not a moral failure for having debt, because as I said before, debt is a tool that us living in this monopoly version of capitalism, we have had to leverage. We have been forced to leverage in a lot of ways because that is how the system is set up. It is set up for us to have to choose debt and then have to pay a lot for that debt because of interest rates, be in debt for a long time, actually pay way more out of our nose because we had to take that debt. And also the system itself is set up so that you feel bad for having chosen the only thing that was available to you. I'm feeling anti-defensive because I'm like, no, you're beating yourself up over something that was never meant for you to win in the first place. So I want to give this person a hug and I want to get out in front of them between like them and the shame of capitalism and tell them that like, you are doing your best to survive. You're doing your best with the tools that you're being given. And by the way, the tools suck and they're not meant for you to thrive. So do what you can to shower the moral shame off because these debt companies absolutely are using no kind of moral compass to deal with you. It's not worth the energy.
Last question. And I got a lot of work questions too, but this comes from people who feel like they're either starting a job or they've left a lot of money on the table when they started a job because they didn't know how to ask for a raise. Please teach us how to ask for a raise.
Ooh, okay. Goodness. I will say I am not necessarily a negotiation queen. I'm thinking about one person who is an incredible resource. Their name is Mandy Woodruff, and they are the like hopping jobs negotiation queen. But one thing I learned from Mandy is when you are negotiating, for example, inside of a job and you're trying to get a higher wage for a job you already have, or you're like want a promotion, something I learned from Mandy is that you want to make the case irresistible. So understanding that today you would like to ask for a raise in the future, put a sort of like goal date for yourself 6 months from now that you are going to be like officially asking for that raise in 6 months. Let your manager or whoever your bosses know, I'm going to be asking for this raise in 6 months. I'm looking to this for these reasons. And in 6 months, I'm going to give you a case as to why I deserve that. And then spend that period of time building up your case, basically creating as much of a paper trail of the impact you make in that company as possible. It's important to let your team know that you're going to be asking for that raise because then it gives them the time to sort of figure out the mechanics around that ask on the higher level while you build your case. You are like putting together data of like impact you have on the customers. You're putting together data on events that you threw and like how that helped the company's bottom line. You're putting together testimonials on customers who thought that you were like the best barista ever. And also checking in with your boss along those 6 months so that by the end of those 6 months, it doesn't feel like you're making a case to the boss. It feels like you and the boss are making the case to their boss. It's like the two of you are now on this like journey to make this right and get a yes to the person above them. Mm-hmm. Because it's not really, it doesn't work great if it's like you versus your boss getting a raise, because the boss also has somebody to answer to. If you help that boss make it easy to present you to somebody higher than them, that could see a lot of success.
I can imagine that a lot of people will hear this and wonder, how do I get my own Berna, or where do I find you? Should they work with a financial planner? What would your advice be for where people should go if they're in the place where they can look for this kind of help?
Oh, you know what? I will say that January is an incredible time to really consider getting expert help. These days, I'm very anti like self-driven work, self-motivation. We need community. We need people to help us. And I would say the best place to start looking for a financial planner is a resource like XY Planning Network. You can go on. And what I love about XY Planning Network, you could find a certified financial planner that is fee-based and not commission-based, my advice. And you can also filter for your life. You can filter for people at certain intersections of life. Maybe you are like mid-career and you're trying to start a family. Also, you are looking for someone in a specific ethnicity set and you want someone who understands like queer family building. You can filter for all of that in XY Planning Network and find a financial professional that understands your life. Because what we're seeing on the New Dime side and helping people connect to financial professionals that they trust is it is a horrible experience to like have a sit down with a financial planner that doesn't get you and is like, why would you put aside that savings for your mom in the Philippines? Like that's not something that my family would do. So like, don't do it. Like, why would you think about caregiving for your family in the future? Why don't you have them do it themselves? It's an awful experience to get gaslit by a financial planner that doesn't get the specifics of your personal life. And so look for that and filter for that in something like XY Planning Network.
Berna, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing just, it was a lot, but just tidbits of your knowledge today. I appreciate it so much. Thank you for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to come on and financially auntie anytime.
Okay, cool.
Berna Anat is an author and financial educator. She spoke with WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.